relaxation of calendars 99-16-68, State of Ohio versus Thomas Jordan. Ms. Ross.
May it please the court. My name is Cheryl Ross, representing the State of Ohio in this matter. I'm here today to ask the court to reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals and hold said that the prosecutions under 29-23-17A, they did not require the proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant used a specific characteristic of his weapon that made it a dangerous ordinance. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Your time.
Revised Code Section 1.42 requires that words and phrases in a statute be construed and read in context and construed according to the rules of grammar and common usage. The state asks this court to keep that statute foremost in its mind in considering this case. In 29-23-17A, the word knowingly is an adverb. Adverbs modify verbs, adjectives, or other adverbs, not nouns. Adjectives modify nouns. There is further support from the state's construction of the statute and interpretation of the language in the committee comment to that statute, which specifically says this section contains a flat prohibition against possessing dangerous ordnance. There is further support from the cases, the 6th District case of Burkhart and the 12th District case of Bryant, both of which construe the same statute, both of which point out that the word knowingly is an adverb, not a verb. In Burkhart, the 6th District went on to say that the adverb knowingly does not refer to knowledge that something is illegal.
Counsel?
Yes.
When you look at the weapon, would have had been obvious to anyone looking at it that it had been altered?
Yes, Your Honor, for several reasons. I am not sure what the average length of a shotgun is. You know, the barrel of my husband's shotgun, for example, is 28 inches.
Well, I assume that when one cuts some of the barrel off, you can see the cut marks and so
right,
forth
right.
At the end of the barrel, right? It's
right.
not a
rough edge, you wouldn't have
it's not a usual ending for the barrel.
Exactly.
Is that would that be consistent with this case that if you looked at the barrel, you could see it was altered?
Yes, the incriminating nature of the barrel or the alteration to the barrel would be immediately apparent to anybody. In other contexts, this in this case, the Court of Appeals erred in applying Model Penal Code Section 2.024 for several reasons. First and foremost, the Ohio legislature did not adopt that section of the statute. Second of all, in courts that have adopted it, for example, in Indiana, Illinois, and New York, even in those states, courts have held that the state did not prove the defendant knew the specific length of the barrel of his weapon and made it illegal ordinance.
Counsel, if we were to affirm the Court of Appeals, how would the prosecutor be able to prove that he knew 17 and a half inches?
Well, this court's well aware, it's impossible to specifically prove what is in a person's mind other than by the surrounding circumstances. And so the state would be left to put forth evidence of the factual length of the barrel and then ask the jury to assume that the defendant was aware of that length. And that's one of the state's concerns in this case, is while it seems like an easy thing to do, to have a ballistics expert sit up and say the barrel in this case is 17 and a half inches long, and then ask the jury to assume the defendant knew that, that seems easy, but how are we, or a trial court, to explain to the jury the dichotomy between what sounds so easy to prove and the state's heavy burden in a criminal case of proof beyond a reasonable doubt?
Is there any other statute that would cover this?
Excuse me?
Is there any other statute that would cover this? Do you have to show a dangerous ordinance, or is there just some little old statute says you can't have sawed-off shotguns?
The only place I've seen it is in the context of a dangerous ordinance, where they've lumped it with numerous other things like explosive devices, mortars, hand grenades, things like that, where they've lumped it in that definition of dangerous ordinance.
So to prosecute for a sawed-off shotgun, you have to charge somebody with possession of a dangerous ordinance.
Unless you have to make it carry a concealed weapon. Concealed.
That's what I was thinking about.
That would sometimes be an alternative, but for example, in our case, the man was carrying the gun to his side right out in plain view, that wasn't an option in this case. Additionally, the appellate court in this case erred in relying so heavily on 2.02 of the Model Penal Code because, as I said, the Ohio legislature didn't adopt it. States that have adopted it have not extended the requirement of proving knowledge of the characteristics of a weapon. And even in California, which, like Ohio, hasn't adopted 2.02, the courts have also held that the state did not prove it and the new specific characteristics of his weapon and why it made that weapon illegal. In large part, the courts in interpreting 2.02 and applying or not applying it, looking at statutes similar to ours, those courts look at the criminal nature of firearm weapons. There are numerous federal cases from other states and Ohio appellate court cases that discuss the fact that sawed-off weapons are not intrinsically innocent objects. They're not used or owned or possessed by the average law-abiding citizen. Instead, they're most often used in furtherance of crime because they're easier to conceal. Such weapons are extremely dangerous, and again, their intent or their purpose is for a criminal nature. These courts rely heavily on United States versus Freed in stating that possession of a sawed-off weapon is such an innocent act, and the likelihood of government regulation is so great that all must be presumed to be aware of that level. The state encourages this court to look carefully at the Eighth Circuit case of United States versus Barr. In that case, the court was facing a statute somewhat similar to Ohio's, again prohibiting the possession of a sawed-off weapon. That court looked at Staples versus United States, upon which the appellate court and the appellee rely heavily in this case. They distinguished that case because, first of all, Staples, the United States Supreme Court specifically narrowly construed their ruling to apply to the federal statute prohibiting the possession of unregistered operative weapons. Second, that federal statute had no mens rea requirement in it at all. Also, the Barr court looked at the fact that sawed-off shotgun is not the traditional lawful weapon, as I just discussed. Instead, that weapon is more quasi-suspect, like the hand grenade success in the United States versus Freed. So there's no legitimate expectation by private citizens that sawed-off weapons would not be regulated. As I've also discussed, there's a lot of concern with the state as to how we would explain the dichotomy between the state's burden of proof and the appellate court's holding that we could ask the jury to assume the facts from mere evidence of one factual length of the weapon.
Is it your contention on that point that the Court of Appeals is incorrect in suggesting that a jury or a fact finder could infer that a possessor of a sawed-off shotgun knew it was the barrel was shorter than 18 inches, that they somehow could not infer that under your burden of proof?
No, I think that they could, but I think that it's going to be something that the jury would be likely to hang up on. If I'm a juror and I'm told that the state must prove every single element of the state beyond a reasonable doubt, to me and to the courts, beyond a reasonable doubt is a fairly high standard. If then in the next instruction or somewhere pages later the court says to the jury, you can assume that the defendant knew that his weapon was shorter than 18 inches or the barrel was shorter than
Or you can infer from the facts that the defendant knew, such as the barrel was rough and jagged, as you said, you can tell if it's been cut off. Couldn't the jury infer from that? In Bryant, of course, the defendant made some statement that indicated that he knew that he had a sawed-off shotgun. I guess I don't understand the problem here. It seems like a typical situation where the jury is told, here are some facts. The state hasn't proven directly that the defendant knew he had a gun that he shouldn't have had, but you can infer from knowledge about the barrel is ragged or things he said. What is different about what the Court of Appeals said here than what would be said in any case?
Well, apparently in this case, the trial court itself had difficulty with such a presumption. The trial court has not acknowledged that the state put on evidence of...
Again, you're saying presumption. What is the presumption?
What, maybe assumption of...
Isn't it inference? You take certain facts, and from those facts, you infer another fact. That's not Presumption to me means that somebody has a presumption that someone did something or knew something, or I guess I'd want to make sure I understand what your argument is.
I think inference is a fine word. I chose presumption because it's the word that the appellate court used in its opinion, but inference works just as well.
But I thought they used, okay. The way I read it, they use permissible inference, but maybe we're reading a different opinion.
You may be correct on that.
Perhaps it would be an easier inference to make if it was just possession of a shotgun. Where I get hung up in it, how are you going to convince the jury to do that your normal shotgun is 25 to 30 inches, and this one less than 18? How are you going to establish you was less than 18? I thought it was 19. I failed math in high school. I was bad at math. It looked like 19 to me. I mean, how do you establish? To me, that's the difficulty is, how do you get to the 18-inch sawed-off shotgun versus the 19-inch?
And again, that's also from the state's the defendant,
they probably sell 19-inch shotguns. Is that the standard size of a shotgun?
I don't know what the standard barrel length is. My husband and I had to measure his last night. His is 28 inches. He said that his dad is an inch or two longer. I would assume that those would be average shotguns.
You had earlier said that it was obvious that this gun had been altered.
Yes. Yes, I don't own a sawed-off shotgun. My understanding is that when they are sawed-off, the person who possesses it or owns it just basically takes the hacksaw to it and cuts off the end. It's not something that a manufacturer does. The state's decision in this case, or the appellate court's decision in this case, can also affect prosecutions in numerous other cases that prohibit the use of dangerous ordnance, such as concealed weapons, illegal conveyance or possession on school premises or in a courthouse, and having weapons while under disability.
What about the statute for a concealed weapon? I remember I defended one time where I think the knife had to be 6 inches or some such thing, and it was 5 3/4, and would that apply? Your same argument going to apply to that? If the defendant had a 5-inch knife on him, he still would be charged with a concealed weapon?
Yes, Your Honor. I think when the statute defines the dangerous ordinance or the deadly weapon, then that statutory definition should be sufficient, and as long as the state proves that the weapon in that case fits within that definition, then that should be sufficient. The state should not have to prove knowledge of the person, should not prove the defendant's knowledge of those specific characteristics.
Okay. On that point, do you have your brief there? On your table of contents page, it's an easier place to find the proposition of law. I'd like to go over it with you. In a prosecution for unlawful possession of a dangerous ordinance, we know what those words mean, under the statute, the state must prove, know what that means, that the defendant knowingly possessed a dangerous ordinance, irrespective of whether the defendant knew the specific characteristics of the item. So the state must prove it irrespective of whether the defendant knew it, because that's what that says. Do you mean possessed a dangerous ordinance and such proof does not need to include that the defendant knew?
Yes.
Is that what that means?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. And perhaps a better way to word it is that the state doesn't have to prove the specific characteristics that made it fall under the category of dangerous.
Because way you have it written here, the defendant knowingly possessed a dangerous ordinance irrespective of whether the defendant knew the specific characteristics, the state still has to prove he possessed a dangerous ordinance, and one of the conditions of a dangerous ordinance is the length.
Right, but
okay.
The most important part of what was in my mind as I worded that proposition, that probably is a better way to word it, was that knowingly, we have to show he knew he had it. We can't take a person who inherits a house full of items from his father, for example, and he doesn't know that dad had a sawed-off shotgun and get shots done in there. So we're saying that knowingly goes to possession. Knowingly does not mean that he knew that it's a dangerous ordinance. That brings us too close to the line of mistaken law, that's in my mind. So the state asks this court to reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ross. Mr. Dewar.
I understand that.
court should affirm the Second District Court of Appeals because affirming that decision will uphold 30 years of precedent of the Ohio State Supreme Court, along with persuasive authority in the United States Supreme Court. Additionally, it will avoid turning legislature as defined as the statute with scienter or knowingly into a statute of strict liability. Third, this decision in the Second District Court of Appeals creates no new burden on prosecution of any statute, particularly this statute. In regards to the precedent of this court, go back to 1970, Casey State versus Tennessee that addressed the law prohibiting the possession of any amount of marijuana. Supreme Court, in that case, determined that the statute clearly said no marijuana is allowed. However, they came up with two additional requirements for approved most education. One, the person had to know that he possessed something. And two, the person had to know that what he possessed was a narcotic. In 1982, the court decided the case of State versus Patterson. That's an author's self case where, as you probably know, an individual offered to sell narcotics to a police officer through an artificial narcotic, was still charged with offering to sell because he paid the offer to sell narcotics regardless of the content, chemical content of the mind of the item sold.
Is this the kind of thing that has to be registered?
Is,
Okay. Have you finished that point? I wonder if I could ask. Interestingly, our statute says no person shall knowingly have acquired any of those verbs a dangerous ordinance. And then the ordinance, the definition of dangerous ordinance says sawed-off shotgun. Now, so is it a reasonable take on that statute to say that if someone knows they have a sawed-off shotgun, the measurement thereof, the 18-inch, you know, then the definition of sawed-off shotgun maybe only comes into play as an argument that I didn't have one, but the knowingly is sufficed by, and the stipulations say he was carrying a shotgun. Doesn't say sawed-off, though. That's your point. I guess I was thinking that it did say it in the stipulations. It doesn't stipulate anywhere that it was sawed-off.
That's one of the curious things about this case that brings it this far. It wasn't a trial. I was a bench for a jury. It was a group of stipulations. And the fire, I must say that the stipulations were rather lacking on prosecutors. I think the trial attorney, Cicero as well, crafted those stipulations very carefully. And he also chose certain facts and conclusions that would tie the court into its decision so that double jeopardy would attach and jeopardy would attack if it ended for the prosecution on remand.
Is it fair to say that if we accept your position that somebody can carry a sawed-off shotgun down the street in Dayton, down along his side, if it's less than 18 inches and not be charged with anything?
They can be charged, sir.
Well, convicted. A legitimate charge.
Not without. I think when the court talks about the Senate District talked about the trial court here not choosing to raise its inference of the individual's knowledge of sawed-off shotgun by the mere possession of the sawed-off shotgun. I think if it's, say, 17 and a half, 18 inches or thereunder, I don't think that, I think there's going to have to be another fact.
Okay, well, let me give you a fair shot at me what I'm thinking about in this case so that you have a chance to dissuade me from it. When I was a city councilman in Toledo, we had that same sort of problem, people walking in neighborhoods with shotguns. So I drafted what was called a long gun ordinance. 3 years later, I'm in the Court of Appeals, and somebody's picked up for carrying a machete down the street. Convicted under the long gun ordinance because it was a dangerous instrumentality. Couldn't do that with this case, right? People could walk all around Dayton with 15-inch sawed-off shotguns and not be charged with anything if they didn't threaten anybody. Just walk down the street, you're passing somebody in the street, he's got a shotgun, sawed-off shotgun, down by his side, that's okay.
I think you're right. Not necessary. Because whenever we try to draw the totality of circumstances, it's a balance.
Sure.
Extremely short, I think there's a pretty good chance that mere possession per knowledge that he has shot that is prohibited by statute. But if it's very close, then look to other things. Is he an avid gun owner, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
Is he known as an owner of several guns? Does he work with guns? Does he shoot them off? Go to the range? Does he talk about them? Specifically this gun, hey, I got a shotgun, for instance, this is how we did crime. Those are just a few of the many facts drawn per individual knowledge.
So this is a case really about 3 or 4 inches. You're saying because it was really sawed off, he would know, you would then impute knowledge?
If we were to say down to 14-inch barrels overall, I think that a juror would be able to clear conscience, draw an inference that the possessor knew that gun was probably something, likelihood of something being illegal.
this case is about 4 inches.
Well, this case we're just here and half here. Well, no, the barrel's less than an inch too short.
Yeah, 17 and a half.
Sorry.
17 and a half.
The overall length of the weapon is almost 4 inches over.
In your 14-inch example, you say you could probably be convicted with that length of a barrel without showing that he knew the length of the barrel?
That's what he's saying.
That would go to showing the visual characteristics of the gun, which he obviously would be able to inspect by holding it. And I think some of the cases that discussed in brief talk about somebody's ability to observe what they have in question. And that's the distinction between our cases here and state. The manipulation, the alteration of the weapon made it illegal is inside and imperceivable to the gun observer or certainly a user, such as in here.
Could we make that same, since the statute does not, prohibit carrying of a shotgun less than 18 inches. Instead, it prohibits carrying of dangerous ordnance. So if we're making an inference about the length of the barrel, should we not really be saying that the law only requires, and it could require from, or could from these stipulations, have a reasonable inference that this defendant understood that he was carrying a dangerous ordnance?
Thank you for that.
That a shotgun would be unlawful as a dangerous ordnance?
Not in case, I don't think you can stop there, Your Honor. I think you have to go to the definition of dangerous ordnance.
Which would be a sawed-off shotgun.
Right. Look for sawed-off shotgun to see what the requirements are for sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah, but the knowingly, well, of course the argument is, but we want to know, where do we stop with the knowingly?
I would ask the court to consider, Justice Wernick, decision and cite the video, which says that the scientist should apply every element that would otherwise be innocent. And is it in this case carrying of a shotgun or saw shotgun that would possibly low prohibited length of innocent behavior? So you have to know something about that shotgun that makes his actions in the Supreme Court of the United States that evil versus not evil. There's no difference between the person that makes a mistake, that his gun is over 18 inches, versus somebody that is sure that it is over 18 inches. They have the same mental knowledge. And that cannot be changed by the factors in the case. The track fact finder determined that, yes, this person certainly must have known because of these reasons. And that person is engaging in some activity.
I'm interested in what rule of law or syllabus you would suggest to us that would fit the examples that you've given us. The 14-inch, for example, somebody has like a 14-inch shotgun, they must probably know that this is a dangerous ordinance. How would we write, other than your basic argument that the state has to prove that the person knows, how would we write a syllabus or a rule of law that would cover these other areas?
I'd ask the court to draft the rule of law that can also be used, of course, as a jury instruction. The fact finder, the state, in order to secure the conviction of this statute, the state has proved beyond reasonable doubt not only possessed a weapon, but or not only knowing they possessed a weapon, also knew the characteristics which made that weapon. I notice that I'm not sure what the light came on, but I'm probably just about out of time.
We have less than 2 minutes.
Okay. In response to various grammatical arguments, I'd ask the court to consider the statute which talks about the plain use of grammatical rules, usage, and context assigned by the prosecution, that the term usage be emphasized. and it changes in order to satisfy dictates of society. And when used in the court of law, it would have to not only make sense, Your Honor, but also be the most just in this case, so as not to treat it innocent behavior of the law. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dewar. Ms. Ross, you saved about a half a minute at this time.
A couple of things I'd like to point out. First of all, the state still maintains that as long as the state is proved that the weapon falls within the statutory definition of dangerous search ordinance, that's sufficient. In this case, for example, the sought-out weapon, the incriminating nature of that weapon is immediately apparent. People are presumed to know the law in the fire. And in considering this case, again, the standard is for to look at the committee comments.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.